When it comes to healthcare, seconds can mean the difference between life and death.
For Partners in Health, time is life. Things change so quickly. The Microsoft Cloud helps our entire staff stay connected and work together in real time. We have 18,000 people around the world. The cloud gave us a single platform to reach across our entire organization, even to the most remote places in the world. We're saving time and money. And every dollar we save is making it to the field to help those that need it.
The ability to collaborate changes how we work. What we do together changes how we live.
Good morning, everyone. Well, good afternoon, actually, isn't it now? Mm-hmm. Can't keep up. It's good morning where I come from. Welcome to our session on using the cloud for public good, helping with nonprofits. And I'm glad to see all of you here today. We have a great panel of people from various nonprofits here to answer questions and to talk about the way that they use the cloud. But firstly, I wanted to introduce really Microsoft's philanthropy's mission and what we're looking to do as far as how do we help nonprofits around the world be more successful through the use of technology. So our mission, empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. This is really something that we feel, every single employee at Microsoft feels, and we're really behind this. And this is what we want to do to help everybody out there, whether you be a commercial customer, whether you be a nonprofit, we want to help you be more successful in everything that you do. Satya said, our CEO said, you know, he looked at what are the challenges that mankind faces and how can technology help there and what is the contribution of Microsoft? And this is really at the heart of what Microsoft Philanthropies is on the planet to do. So we take our assets and we invest them into the world, whether it be our technology that we'll talk about during this session primarily, whether it be just the work that our people do. Interestingly, you may have heard October is our give campaign. This is a whole month when Microsoft employees get involved in charity organizations, helping out in the community, giving money. It's a huge thing for all of us. We spend a lot of time in the community just helping out with community grants, helping out with nonprofit programs. And then obviously we have our voice. Microsoft's voice is a very loud voice. We want to tell your stories too through our channels. So bringing all of these together, we can really help the world be a better place. And today we're really going to look at the technology that we're able to deliver to you. So back in January of this year, you may remember that Satya announced that over the next 3 years, we would be donating $1 billion worth of cloud computing for NGOs all over the world. This was a huge announcement that we're working on, and we actually announced that we will now have the most complete cloud for the modern nonprofit. So all forms of technology in the cloud for you to take advantage of to help you be more successful, to help the organizations that you work with to be more successful. And really what we want to do is empower nonprofits around the world to be able to take on those challenges. And we've got examples on the panel today of people who are involved in doing that on a daily basis. And we believe the technology can be a really powerful force that opens up opportunities to do more for people all over the world, whether they be in your local city or on the other side of the planet. And Microsoft's cloud helps you innovate, whether it be in the office, whether it be out in the field, whether it be delivering services in disaster areas or educating children, or just as I said, working in your local community to help people in healthcare. Technology can really be there, allowing you to think more about what it is you can do, bringing communication and mobility and intelligence to everything that you do. What we announced this week was really the final piece in the puzzle. And we announced that the Microsoft Azure Donations for Nonprofits program was now ready to go. And nonprofits out there can start signing up to receive $5,000 Azure credit to eligible nonprofits renewable annually to help you go out there and deliver services to whatever area that you're working in. We have a donations program that provides cloud services to nonprofits all over the world. And it's part of our $1 billion commitment to donate cloud services. And when we talk about cloud services, we are not talking just about Azure, but we're actually talking about the full range of cloud services that Microsoft offers. Whether it be Office 365 to help your organizations be more efficient in the way that you run every day-to-day business. Power BI, allowing you to really understand what's happening in your world, be able to visualize all of the data that you have. Enterprise mobility. We know that in a number of cases, nonprofits are very mobile. We were actually joking yesterday about someone having an Active Directory account and just one person that hadn't been used in 6 months. And it was a boat driver in Africa. But he still had his phone and he still was part of the organization, but it was just one person in the middle of nowhere. And dynamic CRM, so you can actually manage what's actually happening with your donors, with your volunteers, understand how to get more efficient. And then finally, obviously, we've added in Microsoft Azure as the last piece in the puzzle. And there isn't another organization on the planet who offers this level and this breadth of services to nonprofit organizations all over the world. And we started off with a quick video to just kind of understand what some nonprofits are doing. And what I wanted to do was actually step in quickly to another video. So I'll play this video, and then I'll talk a little bit about this particular nonprofit solution.
How do you best change things for the future? You want to change things for our children.
The heart of racing has provided immense resources for us to be able to do the kind of work that we do.
I mean, we're trying to accomplish something here, and we can't do it on our own. We need help. Microsoft has always been a part of this racing program. They've been with us since day one.
We had to figure out as we were going how to do this, and now we have help. And that has been a huge blessing.
We're racing people. We love to race. We love to win. But our heart is driven by winning for the kids, and that's where the heart of racing comes from.
We've realized that we have an opportunity to try to take that message to a broader audience.
We had no real platform to build a bigger community and share our story.
So the idea was to bring them into the modern era with a responsive site that was backed with all the right technology so that they could go to the next level. When you look at what the Heart of Racing is doing, it's all about raising money for the kids. You start with a simple concept of just web pages, but really we're building a vibrant solution to help them and to broadcast what they're doing, right? To really create that relationship between the fans and the team. When we're in off season, we're spending nickels, you know, literally, to keep the site up, but it's always available. But when we get to race season and we want to get that demand up, we just click a few mouse clicks and Azure's there for us. Another great thing for developers that just was fantastic for us was the ability to have live copies of the site through what are called staging slots without affecting the live site. And we can swap any of our slots that are in development onto the live site.
It takes a team, and they've all got to be totally focused and committed to their craft.
Microsoft has really stepped up and allowed an entire platform to be established for communication, for acknowledgments, and for, frankly, storytelling.
There's really no limits. You know, the race car wants to go as fast as possible, and Azure supports us to do whatever we need as fast as possible. It is cost effective, you only pay for what you need. Scale, on demand. It really truly is an elastic cloud. Modern technology that's there when you need it to grow, whether it's content delivery networks, to security monitoring, to operations monitoring, to availability. It's got what you need when you need it. And it's, you know, any app, any platform.
Having Microsoft step up and be an important partner in this effort has been terrific news to me, and I'm looking forward to great things happening with that.
So you can see there, that's a, you know, an interesting, they're a race team, but they're raising money for Seattle Children's Hospital's cardiac care unit. I got involved with them about a year ago, I suppose, and they, you know, had no technology at all. While they were trying to do fundraising, they really didn't have websites or anything like that. So we actually got involved and helped them build up a new web presence, helped them build up a new donations engine to really be able to start do more to reach out into the communities and into their fans to get more money raised for the hospital. And what I was going to show you, and this will be available in the next three or four weeks, is we actually built this architecture for them for their website as kind of a reference implementation that they could use and that we could use for anybody. And we'll actually be making it available on GitHub from our Azure Samples area. And it's essentially a digital marketing solution. It has, you know, a mobile app. It has a website. It uses app service, and then we have some integration with web analytics and also a Twitter campaign management tool that Microsoft produced. And this is actually going to be made available to you to just deploy into Azure through an ARM template in a very, very simple way to get anybody up and started with this kind of web infrastructure. Notice that we have a third-party donation processor. I'm going to be running quickly at the end to do an e-commerce session on the other side of the building because one of the things that they didn't have was a donation engine, and we fixed them up with through a separate organization an easy way to collect donations. So what I'd like to do is transition over from talking about philanthropies and actually have beneficiaries of Azure and cloud computing from Microsoft really talk about what it is that they've done with cloud computing. So what I'd like to do is go through, and I'll put a slide up for each of the panelists, and be aware they don't know which order these slides are in. So it's going to be a surprise as they pop up. And then what we'll be able to do is we'll be able to ask some questions. I've got some questions that we got in from Twitter and from other people as well, but I'd love to take questions from the room. And for those people who are brave enough to ask a question, you may have seen this as you're walking in. I do have a few Sharks with Freaking Lasers t-shirts, special Ignite edition. So if you're brave enough to stand up and ask a question, I have 10 of these, and then I also have a few hats as well, a few nice cloud hats as well. So we always like to have a little bit of audience participation. But what I'll do is I'll click onto the first slide, and please take it away.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Stan Cubis. I'm with Boys and Girls Clubs of America. And just want to give you a quick overview of Boys and Girls Clubs and what we do, and then throughout the discussion we'll work in how we're actually going to use some of the technology that that Matt was describing. So remember that one slide listed about five or six of them. We've also got some good plans for Xbox Live and games and arenas and some technologies that were recently announced. But our mission at Boys and Girls Clubs is to enable all young kids, especially those that need us most, right, they're disadvantaged, to achieve their full potential in life as responsible, caring, and productive citizens. And our vision is that every kid who walks in through our doors will stay with us, right, for their entire, you know, youth and tweens and teen years, and graduate with a plan and a hope for the future, whatever that might be for them. It might be going to college, it might be going into military service, what have you. So there are a couple of core tenets that we try and hold true to, and that's we want to provide kids with a fun place, right? They all want a place where it's games and fun, right? They want to get out of school. They need to have a safe place. So we talk about online safety. So there's physical safety and emotional safety. We want to provide them relationships with caring adults. So that's one of the core things that makes the Boys and Girls Clubs experience so special is, right, a lot of the kids don't have relationships at home. So we need to provide that for them. And then obviously from a learning perspective, Boys and Girls Clubs wants to provide them with opportunities. And we focus on three main areas: academic success, healthy lifestyles, and good character and citizenship. So our challenge is pretty big. There are about 16 million kids that when the bell rings at 3 o'clock after school, they don't have anywhere to go, right? And they're at risk. And we serve about 4 million kids a year. 2 million are members, 2 million through community outreach. And then on a daily basis, that means we've got about 438,000 kids who walk through our doors, right, who are expecting something from us. We do that through 1,100 independent organizations. They run 4,200 clubs. There's 55,000 paid professional staff, 275,000 volunteers, 25,000 local board members. So it's a very large movement, and what we need to do is use the technologies that Microsoft is providing to train our staff, right, to engage our kids. And we're just getting started on this, right? So if you look at those numbers, right, we're starting small, but we're going to need to scale up very, very quickly. And we'll talk more about that later.
Awesome. Thank you, Stan. All right. Wells, you're next.
Great. Good afternoon, everyone. So my name is Wells Hatch. I'm Chief Information Officer at City Year and have the pleasure and the honor of managing the technology strategy for this organization, which about 6 years ago moved to be central to our scale planning to serve kids at risk. So we recruit about 3,000 Corps members, AmeriCorps members, each year, serve in 300 schools in about 28 cities around the country. We have international affiliates in the UK and South Africa. And our goal is to put AmeriCorps members, young adults, 17 to 24-year-olds, who have opted for a year of national service to work with young kids in grades 3 through 12 to make sure that they are performing at grade level. So tutoring, mentoring, coaching on math literacy, English literacy, attendance, and behavior. As you can imagine, that environment, so we have about 1,200 staff, and as I said, 3,000 Corps members, and we're a very mobile environment. So when we launched our technology strategy 5 years ago, 6 years ago now, we knew that we needed to be in the cloud. We knew we needed to fulfill the promise, which we made at the time, which was if you can get to the web, you can get to your tools, period. So we're moving very quickly and are almost at the point, got that last mile sort of to cover, where we are device agnostic and only require that anybody be able to find a browser somewhere to be able to get to their program management tools, the ERP system, the constituent relationship management platform we have, importantly, the collaboration platform that we use, very soon, in fact, starting this month, the analytics environment. So we're rolling out Power BI across the enterprise as our way to deliver analytics and dashboards to core members working with students to understand what can be done next, as well as managers across the organization to support the core members in their work.
Thanks very much. Okay. Ahmed.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Ahmed Rami. I'm from FHI 360, Family Health International. Our mission is to improve lives when it comes to education, health, or basically infrastructure. We have about over 4,000 employees, and we have offices here in the US and offices in all over the place. I joke with my friends that it's always sunny in FHI 360 offices. There's always sun somewhere. So we were early adopters of Office 365 technology because being an international organization, you have workers everywhere. So you want to have access, you want to give them access anytime and anywhere. So the Microsoft Cloud had helped us achieve this mobility. And because of the difficulties with the infrastructure in some countries, so the cloud and the mobility of the cloud has helped us give the access to all our users. Users, they want access from anywhere. So anywhere would understood that from one location, but then it turned out to anywhere from, it became like device anywhere. So with Azure, we are able to give them access from your iPhone, from your laptop, from your desktop. As an example here, the technology we are using, I can compose, I can create documents on my laptop and then share it on my OneDrive for business and access on my phone. This is one example of the benefits that we have achieved with Microsoft and cloud computing. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, Brian.
Hi, I'm Brian Paste. I'm the Program Director of Infrastructure for the Nature Conservancy. We are a large global nonprofit focused on conservation. Our mission statement is protecting the lands and waters on which all life depends, so no small task. Our CIO likes to say, we're just saving the world, you know, whatever. It's interesting. So we operate in about 45 to 50 countries. It varies a little bit. We're on every continent except for Antarctica. if we could find something in Antarctica we can do, I think we would go there. There's probably somebody opening an office in Antarctica right now that just haven't told us yet. We really have about 3,700 staff spread out across about 800 offices. So we are an increasingly, we used to have a model of very centralized, everybody in one place, you know, frame relay networks, some love for the frame relay networks, really the classic ways of doing things. That's all transitioned now into, you know, VPN tunnels and site-to-site and connectivity that we have no control over. And people in places like China, people in places like Europe, people in places like Canada where nonprofit data has to stay in country. So we deal with a lot of regulatory issues around the things that we work in, the places that we work in. So the ability to float our services around and keep them where we can is important to us and get them close to the people who are consuming them. So we've been long-time recipients of a lot of Microsoft philanthropy that we greatly appreciate and really have transitioned lately into Office 365 services, Skype for Business in particular. We have about 1,000 daily users on Skype for Business right now. I love metrics I can see. I can actually see how many people we have. And we have a number of things. We have actually have our first Azure infrastructure as a service site coming up. It's live right now. DNS changes happen Friday. And so we're moving into that world as well right now to work on those services. So a lot of stuff going on.
All right. Thanks, Brian. And then last but not least, Richard.
Hi, my name is Richard Campbell. I'm one of the founders of Humanitarian Toolbox. We're a much younger charity. We received our 501c3 certification in 2014. So we're pretty much a charity born in the cloud. Our mission is to write open source software for disaster relief organizations using volunteer developers. So we became aware, I've been a developer for more than 30 years, that it's very tough for software developers to contribute their skills to charities in an effective way. We come to appreciate that you can give software away for free, but software is free the same way a puppy is free. And folks have to live with that software over time. And so creating an organization that can take responsibility, keep that source that in the open source world so that anybody can have access to it, use it the way they want to, and anybody can contribute to it as well. As we've evolved, we've come to appreciate that we're going to operate that software too. I mean, you're perfectly willing to take it on and run it yourself if you wish, but most of the organizations we're working with are focused on their charitable contributions, whatever that may be, and that's usually not operating technology, where we're a bunch of technologists, so I feel like we're turning into disaster response as a service. And that's where the toolbox side of this effort has turned into, is we're gradually building up sets of tools so disaster response organizations can get access to it, take advantage of it, and get into this mobile and cloud technological world that can allow them to save more lives in less time for less cost. These days, our primary challenge is getting the right projects worked on at the right time. We've learned how to cultivate developers so that they feel valued and see that their software is being utilized and growing. We have a bunch of projects on the go at the same time. The one that's that most people really grab onto is a project we call Already. The original supporter of that was the Red Cross. And this particular project is really about allowing skilled volunteers to utilize their time effectively through their phones. So the example case we're using right now and has actually been quite successful with the Red Cross is getting smoke detectors installed in homes that don't have them. These typically seem to be disadvantaged homes. And it does take a skilled installer to put it in. And so through some smart software working through the phone, we're able to have that installer, typically a volunteer firefighter or some other person that knows what they're doing with this equipment, and they're able to get a list of addresses to deliver those smoke detectors to that's close to them, efficient time, so they can install more smoke detectors in less time. And then little things like before they go to a site, they can click on that, headed to that site, and the software on the back end will phone the home, make sure they're going to be there and that the installer's on the way, you know, just the way most cable companies don't. And it's increased productivity, simple, you know, plain and simple. But being, we've avoided a lot of getting rid of the barriers around software by doing it completely in public in the open source space. So we're already seeing other organizations looking at what we've built so far and saying, how can we adapt this to our volunteers and our project problems? And that's exactly what we were hoping to do, and we're looking to do more of that.
Excellent. Thanks, Richard. We'll come back on in a sec. There we go. Okay, so you've now met the panelists. We're going to dive into a set of questions. As I said, I have a few that we've had submitted online that I'll kind of start off a couple. But as I say, as you think of questions, I'll hand it over to the audience in a minute. Please come to the mic so that everybody can hear you. And we'll take any questions. And there's a lot of experience in the room here. So the first thing I'm going to do, throw to everybody on the panel is, what do you think is the one most significant thing that the Microsoft Cloud has given to your organizations? We'll start with Wells and work our way around.
Sure. We're a 27-year-old organization. We've had a partnership with Microsoft for, I think, probably 20 of those years. And I would say where we've really sort of come into the best part of the relationship that we've experienced so far is a partnership really around our effectiveness. So the single most influential thing that Microsoft as a technology partner has provided us with is the ability to deliver the tools that we need to our team where they are. And increasingly what we've started the whole school, whole child model, which is working with students in schools, at its foundation, as a data-driven initiative. And we've worked very hard to try and collect data on how the students are doing after the tutoring and mentoring and coaching. And we have seen over the last number of years, which we think we've contributed to, an improvement in the graduation rate across the country, which is very heartening. But what we'd like to be able to do is provide insights to the core members in the schools while they're working with students. And what we're starting to see with what we call student progress monitoring and the ability to embed that progress monitoring onto the mobile device that the core members are using to collect intervention time with is real-time analytics around progress that the students are making in school. We're automating data collection from K through 12 schools in the districts where we work to get grades, assessments, attendance, and behavior data as often as daily in some cases, but in most cases weekly. And at any point in time, when a student is looking, when a core member, AmeriCorps member, is looking to determine sort of what to do next with their students, how best to support them, they've got student progress monitoring that they can turn to, enabled by Power BI, and it's been we're seeing a wholesale change in the responsiveness of the service model.
I'm going to go for two things, like potential and responsiveness. I mean, really, we're at a point now, I think, where traditionally the way that I'd approach an IT project was we'd do a set of requirements, we'd do all the things you do there, we'd go, oh, that's over our purchasing threshold, or maybe we need to go out and do an RFP, whatever we need to go figure out what our options out there. We'd spend months analyzing vendors. Literally now I start off in the Azure portal, and I look for something that we can already use that's already existing and turn those things on. So I was in the web API management session this morning, and I'm just like, I want that, and I want it now. I was like, oh yeah, I can just go to the Azure management portal and turn that on right now and start doing that. And the ability to do that much more quickly, the ability for us to respond to things. And what that translates into, in a lot of ways, is cost savings. And a great example right now, I mentioned we have something going live tomorrow. So we had a vendor-hosted application in Azure. They were charging us $5,000 a month. We kept asking them, what are the Azure charges for that? And they kept saying, oh, we can't really tell you. We don't really know. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's build. You can tell me. And they would never tell me. So we said, okay, we're going to move this over into our own Azure hosting. And we set an original project deadline of December. This was a couple of months ago. And then I started looking at it, and my SharePoint guy and I, we went into the Azure portal, never having done this before, found the SharePoint thing and said, I'm going to click this button and see what happens. And click the button and went, oh, it just deployed a SharePoint farm. That was handy. And then he went and got the databases, and a couple days later we had the thing up in dev environment. We're like, well, that worked. And we're like, okay, we can move that project timeline back now. And I called the project manager up and I'm like, we can do it in September, probably. I can probably get this done in September without a whole lot of trouble. And so we're able to get out of that contract earlier. So we get all that those $5,000 a month we're spending, come back. So that's $60,000 a year. And we're, thanks to Microsoft's donations, we're actually offset right now with Azure credits, so that's actually costing us nothing. We also got rid of a site in the process, which was awesome because I love shutting things down. Because we have these projects where you have these projects, right, that sit out there. Oh yeah, and we have two guys who are still using that. No, I don't care. You know, that's gone now. So that was not historically possible. To try to bring that on premise, put that in SharePoint, figure that out, get that working, make it publicly available anonymously. I mean, we couldn't have done it. And so that to really what it is that flexibility and that ability to respond quickly. And that turns into cost savings. And we're not an IT organization. We're a conservation organization. Every dollar I save on my side of the house goes into the mission. And that's where our money should be going.
I love that SharePoint demo. That's awesome. Yeah, I do that on stage. Click the button. I'm just going to make a SharePoint while we're in the session.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Thanks, Ahmed.
Well, for us currently is the accessibility and the collaboration, and in the future it will be the security and the control. So currently, the collaboration, I think we're benefiting a lot from, example, Skype for Business, for example. We are here in America or in DC, and we are communicating, and we have a meeting with people in Nigeria or people in Bangkok or something. An example, we have a quarterly meeting with our teams in Asia, and the Bangkok office IT manager was coming late, and we were already in the Skype in Skype meeting, Skype for Business meeting. So because of the traffic there, so he used his phone, his cell phone, to connect to us and be a part of the meeting, and we can hear the traffic and the screaming. So it's amazing how it is, and it's like they are with you in the room. And I'm talking about accessibility, for example. We are trying to get away from network drives by moving everything to SharePoint. You always have this problem. You need to get access to your network from outside. So the network, nobody wants to open their firewall, and there's always problems. You have to deal with the network people. But having SharePoint online, it gives us this flexibility. Anyone can access it from anywhere. You just have a browser. You can install it in your iPhone, in your smartphone, or in your laptop or PC, wherever. And for the future, we are testing the EMS Enterprise Mobility Suite, which will give us more security, which will give us more ability to have single sign-on for all the applications that we can publish in Azure, and it also will give us control over the user's laptop with Azure Active Directory. I think being in the cloud with Office 365 and Azure, it makes our life much easier. And the network guy, they don't have to deal with a lot of problems. Thank you.
Yes, that's right. Stop managing infrastructure and start managing what it is you actually need to do. Stan?
Yeah, so actually I'll take all of those, right? They're all great. Huh? Well, no, but those are all great examples and things that that are very important to our endeavors over the next couple of years. But I'll add a couple, and it's scalability and reliability and security. So, you know, when I mentioned the size of the Boys and Girls Clubs movement, we haven't really done a lot in supporting club staff and club members directly, right? It's always been, we produce training material that would get mailed out and club staff would engage with the kids. But with 50,000 club staff and 250,000 volunteers, we need to really focus on quality, right, of our programs, and we need to deliver training programs to them. So we need to be able to ramp up our offerings, right, and get it out to them quickly, and we're doing that through our SharePoint-based extranet. And then, you know, with the kids, if we have a couple million members out there, we're hoping that this platform that we develop, after we pilot it in 50 clubs, will just go viral, right? And then that'd be great if it did that. We're not quite sure exactly how it's going to go, right? So we need to watch it. But, you know, if we need to then just ramp up capacity because it's just caught fire across the movement, then that's something that, you know, we can certainly do in Azure that, you know, left our own devices, we just wouldn't be able to do that. And if we're going to have applications are out there, right, kids are going to be using it, not just in the club from 2 o'clock until 6 or 7. We want them to use it outside the club, right, because we want to extend our reach. So we need to have applications that are highly available and reliable, which we can't do. You know, I've got a team of 25 and a data center that doesn't have redundant power and so forth. So we can't do that, and Azure gives us that capability.
All right, Richard. One.
Well, we live in the cloud, right? What we're doing there, and the nature of our work is when disaster response is needed, that's that elasticity. Certainly our experience is talking to folks that dealt with disaster response, going back to things like Katrina. There was lots of efforts to build software and to stand it up on whatever hardware was available, which is fine. It did its job at the time, but that stuff all gets repurposed and code gets lost, And that effort can get lost as well. When the next disaster comes around, it's hard to deal with. So, you know, one aspect of the cloud is just keeping that source code available so that we can deploy it when we need to. The Azure cloud is fast at that. We can very quickly ramp up an implementation of an application for an organization when they need it, and scale it as big as we need to, and then wind it back down again when it isn't needed as much. So I got to say elasticity has been the one of the big assets for our particular problem space.
So does anybody in the audience have questions that they'd like to ask? Please come up to the mic.
Mine's kind of tangential. Some of you work globally, and something that's always mentioned on .NET Rocks is internet. Not everybody has internet. So how are you guys tackling that particular problem for your organizations when trying to be in the cloud? Because that's not effective for disaster recovery if the internet's down. So how
it's funny how resilient the internet actually is. So let's say it the other way. The cellular network never works perfectly, but it never fails completely either. So one of the efforts we've been making and some of the code we've been building is being able, for example, to just transmit data via SMS. So that underlying layer, granted, I'm getting a little geeky here on the development side, but we're very proud of the efforts we've made in building a communication layer that says, what have we got? Because if all we've got is 2G network, okay, we'll move the data like this. If we've got 3G network, we'll move the data like that. So you usually have something. I would also point out that in most of the developed countries especially, but this is becoming true everywhere, in that immediate 48-hour response time after a disaster, where you can save lives, finding cell phones means finding people. And so you'll see now trucks with masts on them and generators designed to go into a site quickly and increase the cellular connectivity to locate those phones before their batteries die. And that, again, we can lean on that to find folks in time because they're carrying a homing beacon wherever they may be. And the side effect of that, again, is we can make people's phones work really effectively. Now, there's a ton of other challenges in that space, and I could spend an hour easy talking about some of the conversations we've had trying to get that better, but don't give up on connectivity. We are penetrating the whole world with this. It's never as good as it could be, but it's good enough that with carefully crafted code, we can make a huge difference with it.
Yep. We're the ones with the boat driver. That's us. I literally got photographs of a guy piloting a boat. They were like, he really is a real person. He still needs his ID account. I'm like, I don't know what he's going to do with it. He doesn't have a computer or electricity, but I guess we'll keep the account around. And sometimes that happens, and that's okay. We find increasingly that where we're putting offices, we're having those intentional conversations with our operating units about, hey, you're going to open a new office. Okay, what are you going to do in the office? You know, you're not going to be able to fundraise and connect to our fundraising system if you have no network connectivity. So let's talk about that. You know, and it is the fiber now goes to Papua New Guinea. That Pacific Rim stuff is much. We're in China, so we have the opposite issue where we have connectivity, but it's controlled, and so we have issues of how do we actually get anything in and out of China. So there are challenges there. So there's always something, but at some point we do just give up. We're like, you know, the boat driver in Africa doesn't need to, he can email his timesheet to somebody and that's fine, or call somebody up on the phone and give them their timesheet and that's fine, that works. So you just gotta work around it. But it is increasingly true, I think, that you can find connectivity and you can do a lot over a little.
Yeah.
Really.
The ability to work over that 2G network, yep. I mean, that's most of Africa now. And they do more with it than you possibly could imagine. It's not a lot of bandwidth, but they're very clever utilizing it. And they've never built a terrestrial network. They don't need to, right? It's always going to be point-to-point and broadcast wireless. It's just, they've just bypassed all of the stuff that the developed world built first, gone straight to the most modern options.
And just to add to what was just said, I'm originally from Africa, and North Africa, when I travel, I notice that with the time, the development in the wireless and the cell phone, it's going fast because of the infrastructure for the internet is not there, but the satellite infrastructure, it's easy to implement. So that's what I was giving you the example of having SharePoint or having a OneDrive for Business on my cell phone. I can do a lot just with my cell phone. So the cell phone technology is going faster than the internet technology. So if you don't find at that moment, if there is no internet access, then you can use your phone to do a lot of stuff. So that's what Azure and Cloud and Office 365 allowed us to do.
Awesome, thank you.
OK, Give that man a shirt.
Give that man a shirt. Anybody else in the room? Yeah, please just come up to a mic.
How's an organization go about building that relationship with Microsoft to get access to all those resources?
Yeah, that's a question. Do you want to?
Yeah, Jeremy.
Go to a mic. So Jeremy is actually, and Jill, who's sitting at the back, hiding out the back, are both from Philanthropy's organization.
So I'll speak into the mic because this is being recorded. But so all you need to do is go to Microsoft.com/nonprofit, and there you're going to see all of those cloud services that Matt mentioned that are available for nonprofits. You will have to do some eligibility work through our partner TechSoup. But as soon as you are done doing that, then you can access everything that you saw up there. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And
Azure's brand new. Yeah, it was just announced Monday, actually. So we're real excited to see what you guys do with that.
All right, and I think I saw someone else as well.
Exactly the same question. Probably
Well, then you need to think up another question.
So give him a man T-shirt.
To validate that, it works. I mean, that's what we did to get our, you know, we literally went to the nonprofit site. We had relationship with Microsoft already, but we still had to go through this process because it was all the approval for this particular thing. And I literally submitted the form, clicked the button, and like a couple days later, we get an email back, you're good. And I went into the portal, and there I was. I had licenses for things that I didn't have before, and I could just start giving them out to people.
I was curious which services individuals are using. I've heard talk of, so we covered SharePoint and OneDrive, and we covered Power BI. I work for a nonprofit. The most useful thing we've received from Microsoft has been nonprofit pricing for Office 365. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious what the experience has been across you gentlemen in terms of what services you found to be most valuable or what's been the best thing to move from an older on-prem or existing system up to the cloud.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good question. So we've been using SharePoint for as long, well, probably the last, I don't know, 8 or 10 years. And that is a very, very strong part of the City Year culture, right? The team orientation of that platform fits very nicely with, you know, the whole City Year approach to how we do our work. And as I mentioned, we did a bake-off of visualization tools and landed with Power BI. It wasn't a slam dunk, but both, you know, current functionality and the roadmap for Power BI is nothing short of, you know, impressive. And so we're using Power BI. We are, the last mile that I talked about is to finish emptying out the rack, as it were. And what we have remaining in there now is the SharePoint farm, so we're moving the SharePoint online. And then we have been developing our data warehouse in Microsoft SQL Server, and we're moving that into Azure. And importantly, one of the things that I've been working on during the time here is this connection that we're developing with the schools. So we're going to start using Azure services to be able to facilitate the movement of the data and the cleansing of the data on the way in from the schools. So those are, and then we're using Skype for Business, actually. And I was going to mention, connectivity has other influences, right? The improved connectivity in the developed world, as it were, has enabled us to plan to drop our connectivity costs significantly this year. We're moving away from MPLS and going completely Ethernet with our connectivity for voice and data across our network. And we couldn't have done it had it not been for the kind of connectivity that's available today.
And I think we have very, very similar types of initiatives that are going on. So Power BI is a critical one for us, trying to bring together all the different data sources so we can, you know, just like all nonprofits, you have to prove that what you're doing results in some positive outcome for something, right? And the analytics are saying, well, if, you know, if we train club staff to do this, that have an influence on kids' outcomes and so forth. So that's a very powerful tool for us. The Office 365 suite has been enlightening. It was a very easy conversion for us, so we did that with one of the partners. But we've really underestimated the training and the ability for people to, use it to its full potential, right? And part of that is, like we were discussing a couple of days ago about, you know, are nonprofits on the leading edge of technology or not? But just with, you know, with all the technology and capability that Microsoft is providing, right? And if you're with them and you saw the whole raft of capabilities, it really does provide you the ability to be leading edge. sometimes bleeding edge, right? When things are released quickly, but there's stuff coming out all the time, and we're having a difficult time trying to say, okay, well, groups just came out, or planner just came out, and right, and this came out, and they're all things that we need to do. Sometimes we're just having a hard time keeping up with it. So that's a, you know, it's a great thing to have, but it's also something that you really need to you know to manage and focus on.
And also the license that you use it for, A3 license, for example, it gives you Outlook, gives you SharePoint online, gives you a Skype for Business. If you have users that don't need that, then they can be licensed with E1 license, which is cheaper and free. So it depends on what you want to do with your license. So and then there's E5 license for, I don't know, for VIPs or something. So it's the three different licenses or more, and based on what you need, you can license your user this way.
I was curious if, because I haven't had a chance to look at this, but it's on my list of things to do, is to take a look at Dynamics CRM from a fundraising perspective. I don't know if you guys are using it.
We have an in-house CRM that we just deployed recently, and I don't know, we looked at it, and I wasn't on that team, thankfully, because that's not a project I wanted to be involved in, but those of you who've done CRMs, no, but we haven't. But we do use, so answer your question, so E1, so Skype for Business, which is huge for us, and I looked at our month-to-month, I looked at our year-to-year's conference calling cost, July 2015, July 2016. We went down $6,000 in conference calling costs month, year-to-year, and I can pretty much attribute that to Skype for Business calling. People doing, instead of doing a two- or three-person conference call, doing a Skype for Business call, so $6,000. That's, if I can keep that up, I basically pay for my office licensing that I'm paying for, so Pro Plus out there. We're experimenting with the PSTN conferencing. We have a few folks lit up, myself and some of them as well, in the Skype for Business, and the Cloud PBX as well. Again, I had somebody, that whole agility thing, I had somebody who said, I used to have Skype, and I used to make phone calls in Skype, and how do I do that in Skype for Business? And I was like, you know what? I've actually got a Cloud PBX license. Let me just get you a phone number. That took like 2 minutes. Let me just turn on your license. Let me just do this. And literally, while I had her on a Skype call, actually, I had her on a Skype for Business call, I gave her a phone number and gave her dialing capabilities. And didn't have to do any. I mean, and that was huge. And so we're looking at that, and the cost savings are big there. Again, running stuff, and we're starting to run stuff in Azure now. Really, that's a new thing for us. We're big. We have a lot of stuff in AWS. We'll probably keep a lot of the stuff in AWS. Our spatial data structure, a lot of public spatial data structures out there. But we're running stuff in Azure now. The SharePoint stuff's the first time. You know, we're hugely interested in the API stuff that we can run through there. We have a number of things that are out there, all common services. And we mix and match the licensing. It's a really good point. We take our volunteers and our short-term employees, short-term volunteers and short-term summer employees, and we'll put them on E1 licensing and then use on-premise office licensing that we already have for them and save the subscription-based licensing for staff. But that ability to mix and match is really super useful to really figure out what's the right sweet spot in there for how to match things up. It can be logistically challenging. It's, you know, the processes involved in that behind the scenes can be really challenging.
I have two questions. One for the Boys and Girls Clubs guy. With all the new features coming out, what are you doing? Because I have a team of 7, so a team of 25 to manage the waterfall, the agile, just constant. Oh, we need this feature. We need this feature. That's question one. And then for question two, for the toolkit guy, we're embarking on a whole bunch of software development we don't have the money to pay for, and community contributed software development would be perfect for us. What guidance could you give for that?
Stan. Yeah, so it's interesting in how you keep up on all this stuff. So I guess I'm fortunate enough that out of the 25 people, I was able to carve out one position and label it an enterprise architect. So that, right, that person's responsibility is going out and finding out about all this stuff. Unfortunately, he couldn't be at Ignite this week, which would have been great for him. It's that and just trying to find time for the team. So we're just going through our capacity and demand planning, and everyone's tight on resources, and you try and service all needs, but we're actually being we're being selfish. We've reserved 10% of our staff's time for innovative stuff, whatever that is. We're not quite sure how we're going to use it yet, but we just know we've got to invest in our people, right, and the IT organization to help get that out there. We've also got a couple of groups within within the organization. They're not really like IT steering committees, but they're more operational groups and people who are interested in taking advantage of new technologies, right? So we'll go do some quick training with them and then let them be the spokespersons across the organization for getting it out there.
If you're gonna get volunteer developers to work for you, you should go where they are. So there's a reason HTBox lives on GitHub, that's where they are. Facilitating that to make it work really well came down to making sure you're not wasting the developer's time. So we put a lot of effort into really clearly outlining what our software is going to be, breaking that down into specific issues, and then that quickly becomes an overwhelming list of things as you take apart what an application is going to be into individual issues. So then we'll sort those into milestones. And the milestones sort of give people a chance to go, okay, well, if I do this, we move this immediate milestone closer. So folks have a better sense of what they can actually work on to make a difference based on the skills they have and what will be the biggest impact for the organization. We run a lot of code-a-thons, although we've come to appreciate that the code-a-thon itself is not, the code you get from the code-a-thon isn't the most valuable thing that happens. The most valuable thing that happens is you get someone enamored of a project, that they recognize the value of it, they enjoy working on it, and so we're more interested in the check-ins, the contributions that come from the developer after the code-a-thon than we are that day. And that is cumulative. You know, again, if you can continue to shepherd your developers and give them a sense of successful contribution, that the project's really moving forward, they'll keep contributing. People like to work on things that are successful and that are being productive. So I've got to admit, there's a critical mass to that, that you have a project leader who's really engaged and is on top of those work items, that pull requests are being responded to. You know, we're not innovating in GitHub flow. We're following the practices that most people already know, that they're comfortable with. We happily teach that when necessary. The challenge is we've learned to be very disciplined around software development because we know people are going to come and go. So you can imagine how you think about a piece of software knowing that no team member is permanent or vital. They have to be able to change all the time. So we're big on coherent documentation. We're very big on testing. You know, I think highly of a volunteer developer who is unwilling to work on a piece of software because he doesn't see tests that he trusts. And so I've often had the most experienced people look at a given project and go, you know, I'm not gonna add new code to this, I'm gonna write some tests. And well-tested software that it's got a lot of deep testing built into it, gets worked on more. So I can, the leadership side of running a software project with volunteer developers about making sure they know they're not doing harm, they're making a useful contribution. You know, pizza helps, but but successful software development helps more. Right? Being able to build. And then one of the things that's been great about working inside of Azure is letting people light up an instance. Here you go. I mean, one of the battles you'll run into is that software licensing is generally shaped around the individual, not the project. And so we have run into issues where we just can't get licenses for certain things. When Xamarin was a pay product, they were willing to let us use Xamarin to build mobile apps, but we couldn't work out the licensing because it's by a per dev license. Now that it's bundled with Studio and Microsoft's involved with the MSDN at the MSDN level, we don't have that problem anymore. So that tool becomes more viable. You'll run into that issue.
I just want to highlight one thing too. I'm thankful that there are guys like Richard out in the world, but at City Year Development, that word is never mentioned. And I think that if you're looking to establish a roadmap for your organization, which is the way to keep from getting out of reacting all the time, to my mind, you need to take development out of the mix because you'll never stop being able to meet requirements if you're developing your own solutions. But if you go to the market and you're saying, you're talking to your organization about what's available and whether or not there's a fit with those requirements, A, you'll probably wind up with some best-in-class solutions if you run a good process. And B, you'll narrow the requirements down to the point where when you need an organization like Richard's, you know, it'll be clear as a result of having gone to the market.
Yeah, your
position's very challenging.
I really agree with that, though. I mean, what I do now is that we build platforms or find platforms for people to use, and then we point people at those and say, I know you thought you had to do something. I'm going to say the B word. We use Box as our file signature service. No offense to OneDrive. And And we've had instances where people say, well, I'm going to go get this thing over here, and somebody had this development. I'm like, no, you can just do that on this thing. You can do that on Box. Or you can do that in, we can do that in SharePoint. We had another great example. Our IT people wanted a new contracting system for managing, you know, incoming, outgoing contracts. We found something in the SharePoint marketplace for SharePoint Online and just used that. And there's no custom development. There's nothing. So really, it really is about finding, and this is really where the Azure stuff really comes into. Again, is literally you can find something. It's doing that homework and knowing, oh wait, there's a thing out there you can use. And maybe it's 99% of what you need, but we're a nonprofit. 99% of what you need is really freaking good. You know, and that's, go with that. So there is custom stuff that has to happen. I mean, we're a really large organization. We have a lot of, I have on-premise Exchange, I have on-premise SharePoint. Our CRM is on-premise, our PeopleSoft is hosted. I mean, you know, we have big enterprise systems. But we are moving increasingly towards these things where we really are getting out of that development model and saying, let's give people the right places, let them build it. Power BI is another really good example. Our BIA team, they were like, oh, we're doing this. I said, here you go, here's Power BI. You're licensed, have a great time. I don't have anything to do with it. They go off and they do their stuff. And they don't develop, they just build inside that UI. So those opportunities are out there. And if you can get 70% of your stuff in there, that's good.
So,
he gets a shirt, by the way.
Yeah.
He does get a slacking. Am I slacking?
One shirt or two? I had two questions.
Yeah. So our company, we have about 96 locations around the United States. As of next week, we become one company. So the challenge has been is every site has their own file server, and now everyone wants to be able to see everyone's files. Mm-hmm. So we've been looking at Azure, SharePoint Online, OneDrive. What do you guys use as a for your companies to take over those kind of tasks, I guess. I heard SharePoint from one of them.
Yeah, so we had similar issue, not too many companies, but FHI merged with AED. So AED was a different system, and FHI was a totally different system. AED was already in the cloud. We were in Google. But when we merged, Office 365 came existence. So we choose to go to Office 365 because we had better options to go with SharePoint, for example. So I think SharePoint will be a better start for you. How many companies?
96 locations.
Yeah. So I think SharePoint and Azure will be a best start for you.
This story is probably 5 years old. Well, it is 5 years old at this point. But we have 28 locations around the country. And every one of them had a file share. And they competed for how deep the, you know, folder structure went. I don't remember who won, but it was scary. And we migrated into SharePoint. And it took some planning because we wanted to, I referred to it as tagging and bagging on the way in, right? We wanted to put some metadata with those files on the way in. And then we archived at the same time. So it was it took, you know, you had to have mind share and you had to be patient with people because file shares are, you know, very, very near and dear to people's hearts. But we migrated to SharePoint and established team environments when we did it.
Just a quickie, sorry. So if you go back, if you go down to the expo, talk to fast track people. Mm-hmm. They will help you with that. But there are some tools in the market that will help you to migrate. But Fast Track will give you some good advice.
Yeah, and we are, as I said, it's 1,100 independent organizations. So we're not trying to consolidate them all into one. We've got a strategic planning process. This is what we're going to be like in 2025. So we'll see how many we can whittle that down to. But what we do is we do collect a lot of information, benchmarking information between the organizations, right? And we use SharePoint and Active Directory and all the various security rules and roles and so forth to get the information back out to them, right? So they can share and collaborate and learn from each other. So that's a real effective solution for us.
We also, to touch on that, so SharePoint, obviously SharePoint is very, very popular. OneDrive for Business is actually underpinned by SharePoint. So if you use OneDrive for Business, what you're really doing is storing it in a SharePoint area. Mm-hmm. There is also something we announced probably about 6 months ago now, which is a new file store in Azure. So as part of our storage offerings, we now actually have a files storage offering to be a file share in the cloud. So that's another thing you can actually look at in that situation.
No. Sorry. More stuff.
Did I give you another thing to go and look at? Yes.
Something to turn off.
Like, oh, yeah.
There's always something new to look at in Azure. Yeah. Anybody else in the room? Yep. Oh, and then you.
So my question's a little more related to data mining. I work for a nonprofit law firm, and our case management system is through a Linux server. So I build views and tables, and then I'll dump them into things like Crystal Reports and Microsoft Access. And I like to play around with that a lot. So I've been hearing a lot about SQL Server and, of course, the new version. So I guess I have two questions. One, what kind of success have you had using SQL Server? Like, what kind of pros can you give me on that as far as using it next to, like, Microsoft Access? And also, how's the migration process? Because when I think of data mining, you can spend hours doing that. So I'm always a little timid on backing up my databases to anything. It's just kind of scary. I don't want to lose anything. So pretty much that. Like, what do you think about SQL Server, and how is the migration to the cloud with SQL Server with all your databases?
So all of our SQL Server is on-premise. We love SQL Server. I mean, we've migrated everything off of Oracle on a SQL Server because Oracle support contracts are a curse upon the land. They are. When they say winter is coming, it's actually brought to you by Oracle. No offense. I mean, they are.
I believe strongly in this.
They are a challenge. I can read my DBA guy in here. He really loves it.
They have a licensing model based on how much money do you have?
Pretty much, exactly. Yeah. Well, so what could you afford? But SQL Server. It's our data warehouse is a SQL Server. We use a lot of SQL Server stuff. We've not moved any of that out to the cloud yet. Just because a lot of those offerings are new. I mean, a lot of this Azure stuff is really new, and so we had a lot of stuff entrenched already that's in place. But you can pretty easily move that data and ship it around. I mean, SQL Server is a enterprise database. It's definitely not Access. You're going to need a skill set. You're going to need people who understand how to be SQL Server DBAs. You know, it's not just a matter of dump a bunch of stuff in a table. You know, I had a great conversation with a developer the other day, and he's like, oh, I got this thing. I put it in WordPress, and it's a 3,000 column table. And I'm just like, you've got a 3,000, you know, I'm like, what are we going to do? How are we going to, and I want some more data. And we're like, no, you can't have any more data in your WordPress MySQL database. You know, that belongs every, so you definitely have to buy into that. But it's an incredibly powerful tool. The SQL Server reporting services that are coming out in 2016 are basically Power BI on-premise. And, I mean, that's really huge because then you'll have that ability to work in those two worlds. That's a challenge with Microsoft right now. And they've, you know, I've heard them say, you know, basically the on-premise stuff is a year behind the cloud. Because you think about it, right? You got to take this stuff down. You're making it compatible with HP's hardware, and everybody, you know, it's got to go through a lot of testing to make that feature set there. But they're getting better at that feature parity, so you can do that if you're working in Power BI on the cloud. You say, you know what, this data doesn't, I don't feel comfortable putting it on the cloud. You can work with it locally in SQL Server with the same reporting tools, so it's easier for folks to move that stuff back and forth and feel comfortable with it again without doing any coding because they're just building it in the Power BI user interface. So that's
if you can haul it into the cloud. There's where elasticity plays off again, right? Like this analytical process I used to do on-premise, it takes all day. Well, you just turn up the knob in Azure, and it's 10 minutes, and you're done. Yeah. You know, that's the advantage of that. It's that short, bursty, highly distributed analytics that Power BI does a good job on. It's worth learning. And you don't, you know, if you're allowed to do that analysis in the cloud, don't even convert to SQL Server. Haul the Access database up. It'll read it.
Yeah, we ship data out to Power BI in the cloud from SQL, from Excel spreadsheets, from anything else, and put it out there and, to visualize it and build the dashboards.
So we are looking at SQL on Azure. So currently we still have our SQL on-prem. We have some applications that are in Azure, but the backend database is on-prem. So there is a VPN channel going between the two. But we were looking at SQL in Azure, but there are a few options. Do you want, I think Matt will have better understanding for that, but do you want the instance of SQL in Azure, or do you want the server in which you want to install SQL itself? So you have to see and to ask for what you want. So.
I'll use a visual and describe. I think what you're challenged with is, you know, this whole sort of multiple data store issue, and that's you're not going to have a solution for that. You're not going to have a single version of the truth sort of, you know, vibe in the organization until you give people a place to go and look for the data and have it be one place. And honestly, cloud computing is important conceptually too, because nobody knows where the cloud is, but they know it's one place. So we've started to build out MARTs And it's my job, my stated purpose, and my team's stated purpose, is to go eliminate every other data store that exists in the organization and take data and data management out of everybody's job description that might have it today and replace it with analytics. And I'm going to own data. And I'm going to put it in March, and you're going to find it there. And I'm going to spend money to make sure it gets there in an organized way. But it's much easier now than it ever used to be. And you know, all those things that you described, there are tools that are probably very valuable in developing solutions, are obstacles in the way of getting to where you're going to need to go ultimately anyways.
Great. My question is linked to yours, your last statement. It's one cloud, but how do you get over the regulatory issues by country in terms of really keeping the data within the country? I think one of you alluded to that earlier, versus making sure that you're collaborating across all countries, and it's that contrast that you need to deal with.
So you're dealing with Ireland, are you?
I'm Canadian European. So
then you're both. I couldn't quite get the accent there.
I bridge both continents.
Yeah. So it's definitely a challenge. I mean, I will give Microsoft credit. That Azure cloud has the ability to home your data in data centers that deal with those. There's Germany. There's Ireland. I think with the Brexit vote, Microsoft spun up another center really quickly to deal with it. Like, oh, we can do that. We can take care of that. You know, take care of that. So that's the way. And then from a convenience factor, I just found out about this conference. Actually, there's now the SharePoint Online command for where to home your users in the closest SharePoint, Skype for Business Online. Skype for Business Online, where you can home them and say, I want them to be here. That's not data storage, but it's enhanced performance for them because they're closer to it. So you can. I mean, it is challenging to figure out where your user's data is. You can. There are things you can do to segment your data out into different data centers and different
zones. You can still keep one front or one interface, but the data is actually residing in different areas of the globe.
Yes, there are ways to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually we see not just for sovereignty, but also for latency issues.
Yep.
We see a lot of people, you know, as you alluded to, who will put data in certain locales because they need it to be close to their users, but their users are all using the same interface
data
from inside Azure.
Yeah.
And Office 365 is actually a little bit different. It's easier from an Azure point of view to understand where things are because you physically go and say, this is where I want something to be. Office 365 is actually in more data centers. Azure's catching up quickly, but because it started first. So it actually has more data centers, but you have less control over where it specifically is, and it's a little harder to manage that.
Yeah, but for Azure, literally, I mean, we picked a zone. I want this one in the Midwestern U.S., and there you go, and it stays there, and it resides there, yeah.
You know, and things, you know, from a sovereignty point of view, you know, places like Germany, that's actually a German cloud, not just data centers in Germany. It's managed by a German organization, not by us, because that's their regulatory requirements. Same is true of China. China has to be managed by a Chinese organization, but it's still our data centers. But we don't manage them, and that gets you in the right sovereignty areas.
Thank you.
You did think up a question.
Give her a shirt.
I wouldn't have slept tonight thinking I'd taken a shirt.
You would have had like nightmares of sharks with lasers.
Yeah,
I have a shark with lasers?
Yeah. Or a goldfish with a laser anyway. So my question to the panel, and thank you so much for your information, it's been really, really good. But I'm interested to know whether anybody had any experience internally of people who were really hesitant about putting data in the cloud from a security perspective.
You know, depending...
Who wants to start?
Yeah. The cloud's more secure than your building, period. You may not want to believe it, but it's the truth.
I think you're preaching the choir here. He's interested.
He's interested
in how you dealt with it as an issue internally.
Right.
I mean, you. Yes, I still have it. I mean, we are the reason we're having Exchange on prem is because my Exchange guys would basically rip my head off if I tried to go to Exchange. So we're going to have to work our way into that. I think it's shifting, and I actually saw sort of one of our more sort of strident ops people the other day actually sort of come out and say, I realize we're not going to be managing Exchange in a couple of years. We're not going to be managing a lot of these things in a couple of years. They're going to move out to where data center folks aren't going to do these things anymore. So I think they're starting to see that now. And we've had some success. I mean, we've done some things, and we've put some things out in the cloud that have gone well, and we can point to them and say, well, we did this, and it was okay. And the great thing about really good deep tech people is, right, we're really logical people, and we're like, oh, okay, cool, yeah, that's right, yeah, okay, that, there's a fact, and I can deal with facts, you know, and that it works. But it's an education process, and you got to be sensitive to it, and you got to spend the time and work through. And I think the proof of concept stuff works really well with the deeply tech folks who are usually objective, that kind of stuff. And
I always question how often a sovereignty issue is brought up by someone who just wonders if they're going to lose their job. You know, I make all these podcasts for IT pros and stuff, and I get those emails every day. And my message has always been, there's more work than we can do, right? This is not getting rid of work. There's lots more things to do. But I think that's a case-by-case, individual-by-individual basis to figure out, what is it you value in your skill set in this organization? Do you see the other things you could be doing if you weren't bound to this, so that they want to let that go? You know, I have met a 60-year-old COBOL programmer saying, please finish phasing out the system. I want to retire. But I also know some guys that have spent the past 10 years running Exchange, and they're bloody good at it. They're scared to death. They don't understand how much talent they have elsewhere inside of the organization. They know the company backwards and forwards. They know their communication systems well. Running Exchange is one of the least important things they do. They just don't see that.
And so one other, one thing, not so much from the nonprofit experience that we have now, but in a prior life, I was working for a manufacturing company, electronics manufacturing, and so it's third party, and it was a lot of defense contracts. So we had ITAR, which is International Trafficking and Arms Regulations and so forth, and where does data have to be? And it really wasn't a tough thing as we were trying to move data to the cloud from a customer perspective, necessarily, and from the sales teams, right, and the marketing teams. It was more from the legal teams, right, and how quickly could we go, what does this mean, and so forth. So I say if you do have legal staff in your organizations, it'd be a great thing to do is just educate them, right, on what is the cloud. And right, you were talking about, look, it is more secure here, and here's why, and here's what they do, and what's encrypted, right, at rest and in transmission and so forth. Think capabilities that we just had no ability to do internally, right, to scale. And with some sense of security. So
and the compliance, the certification that they have, 47 of or more than 40 over 40 certification of compliance. And the other way to deal with it, I give them example of Fortune 500 companies that moved to the cloud. Are you going to be more you care for your data more than this company, for example, and give some names? Mm-hmm. You cannot be more secure than the cloud, I think.
So the legal part of it, sorry.
I was just going to say, I you may have a job that's similar to mine, which is I need to explain things, and I'm better off if I do it efficiently. Because if I go into the technical detail, A, they tap me out pretty quickly, but B, I lose them, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I use terms like, we've outsourced the perimeter. And I'll get a question back, and I get this from the audit committee. So who'd you outsource it to? Microsoft, right? You've got some people that have a decent amount of street cred, some brand names that you can throw around, and you've said, and I do say this, I've outsourced the perimeter. We do not manage the data. I've given it to people that are much, much better at it than we are. And there are questions sometimes that go beyond that, but if I can throw around terms like Workday, Salesforce, and Microsoft, people pretty much nod their heads and we move on to something much more interesting.
The legal part is a good point, though. I have had deep conversations with a number of our attorneys about this is what this means, really what this means, and this is what it means to us. This is what the implications are for us. And once they understand that, it's much easier for them, I think, to kind of sign off on things. And if you get the attorneys to sign off, it removes that thing that often gets used, right, which is, well, legal's never going to agree to this. It's like, well, legal's already agreed to it. Oh, okay, yeah. But it's a process.
Yeah, you should can also point them, you can go and look at all of our compliance standards that we meet. I mean, we have governments in the cloud, we have military in our cloud, we have certifications all over the place that support the security. But and you can make it as secure as you want as well. I mean, if you're familiar with a thing called ExpressRoute, ExpressRoute is a direct connection into our data center. When I say a direct connection, it's your piece of fiber. You can go and buy fiber and have it put into our data center. So you even own the wire that the data's going over into our data center. And to Richard's point, yeah. It'll be very hard for anybody to have a secure data center as an Azure data center. That's a reality. But you do have to get people over that hump to the point. Mm-hmm. I like Richard's comment about these people don't realize how much additional value they have. I remember when I worked in SQL Server many years ago now. And we, you know, to go to Oracle, so, you know, you have Oracle DBAs and you have SQL Server DBAs. And SQL Server introduced things like self-tuning, you know, so it was a self-healing database. All the Oracle people did all the time was sit in front of the Oracle database and tune it. That was the work. They weren't actually giving much value to the organization, and they were paid immensely well to do that, because Oracle didn't do any self-tuning. The SQL Server DBAs didn't have to worry about that, so they were able to invest their time in designing data, you know, designing data architectures and seeing how it would integrate into the rest of the applications in the business, really being able to help the business be successful with data, as opposed to just keeping the lights on. And if you talk to people where they worry about, oh, I need to manage my data center, what more they could do, because those jobs don't go away, they just change when you go to the cloud. And it's still a lot of stuff for IT pros to do in the cloud. And the one thing we always said about the SQL Server thing, unfortunately, was what customers saw was SQL Server, self-tuning, easier to use, need less experienced people. That's completely not the case, by the way. I still want a really good DBA because things do go wrong. And at that point, if I have an unexperienced person, it goes badly. Mm-hmm. So you still want to have experienced people, but you want to have them invest in their time in the right way, not in something that isn't valuable to the business. We have about 10 minutes left.
We are actually over.
Are we?
It's 1:47.
According to this.
Yeah, you're going to need to get your jogging shoes.
Let's get an NTP server in here so we can sync this stuff up.
Well, you see, I'm running on Seattle time. So we actually have three hours. So I wanted to thank you all for your time. This was great. The problem is that the time is up there.
Yeah.
So I can't see it. Hopefully you got questions answered. This has been recorded, so you can come back and listen again. The panel's going to stay around to answer, you know, anything additional you have after that. I just wanted to roll us out, say thank you very much to everybody. And I have one more video, just because it's not all about saving lives and things. There are people doing fun things in this nonprofit.
Here's more local music. It's Summer Cannibals from the new album, Full of It. Here's Say My Name.
One can argue you wouldn't have the Seattle music scene without KEXP and when we were KCMU. It's so important to bring people and music and ideas together in an outlet like this that can join every demographic on the idea of just music, creativity.
We've been very pleased with the relationship with Microsoft, and we'll be increasingly relying on Azure and Microsoft's technology. So what is it going to take for us to generate more impact in the future? How do we invest in technology moving forward?
The services we have in Azure now are really critical.
We keep a record of 2 weeks of everything that we played 24/7. So if you want to listen to a show that played last Monday at 8 o'clock in the morning and you missed it, you can go to our website, pull it up, all the way down to the 5-minute chunk as to what you want to play, and it will start there and play for as long as you want.
I feel like we've only really scratched the surface of what we can do. You know, video is such a huge part of what we do that we really want to understand what the capabilities are. Web hosting, you know, basically all of our online services can basically live up there.
We chose Azure because it's the most versatile for what we're looking to do. Microsoft provided amazing support to help us onboard with the things that we needed help with. We ran into a few roadblocks because we were confused with certain paths, and you guys went above and beyond.
It feels like we're just limited by our imaginations. And I think that as we've grown throughout the years, that's the one constant throughout all of the changes from KCMU to the building on Dexter to this new building. People are drawn to KEXP because it's authentic. And our audience is global, and so we have to be able to deliver, you know, a great service in Germany, you know what I mean? Which is surprisingly a huge audience for us is in Germany. If all that traffic has to come back to our little server room in Seattle, we're not gonna be able to do it.
Azure supporting any VMs we need, be it BSD, Linux, Windows, since we're spread across all kinds of different technologies, you guys give us the ability to leverage that how we want rather than being pigeonholed into something. And that's really nice because we've used the tools that best suit our needs rather than trying to find tools that best suit our hosts' needs.
Whatever the technologies are that, you know, emerge, we can take advantage of them. And the cool thing about working here is there's always an appetite for that.
Because there's stations like ours that continue to broadcast around the world, that continue to bring in community, I think that's only going to get bigger and bigger for us and for the people who donate to KEXP.
So thank you all for your time. I hope you've enjoyed the session. I recommend you go back and watch that KEXP video again. There's a nice Easter egg while they're on the whiteboard, if you can find it. The man found it. He should actually have another T-shirt for that. In the middle of their architecture diagram, you'll see a flux capacitor, and they've actually done the calculations for it. So this is where you can go to the nonprofits site. And obviously, the team is here, Jeremy and Jill at the back. They have a booth down on the show floor. Thank you for your time, and have a good rest of the conference.